The opinions expressed on End Time are not necessarily the opinions of Impro Mafia. So if you have a problem, email Dan and he'll apologize for whatever it was that Greg said. Impro Mafia presents End Time! Welcome to End Time, a podcast for improvisers and aspiring improvisers. I'm Dan Beeston, Impro Mafia's tech boy.
And I'm Amy Curry, improviser, newest Impro Mafia committee member and girl about town.
Yeah. Oh, I'm on the committee now too.
Yeah.
We had our annual general meeting.
Actually, I think you might be newer than me because alphabetically... Oh, no. No, that would be my last name.
Yeah. I've been on the committee before. So I guess I'm just renewing it or something.
Okay.
And how exciting is that going to be? Attending meetings.
Oh, I love meetings.
Learning about the financial stuff.
Oh, finance. Finance is good. Double entry bookkeeping. It's fun.
And learning about what things to do were on the list that people didn't do. And
assigning blame?
Assigning blame. I like assigning blame. Meetings are all about.
Exactly.
And then Wade does everything for us.
And there might be biscuits.
Oh, yes. Or pizzas.
I'm glad I joined.
Now, why don't we discuss the week in improv for the last couple of weeks?
The week that was.
Yes. We've been doing the rookie show at 320 Leichhardt.
Ah, the speakeasy.
That's been fun and games.
Mm.
You started doing emceeing there.
I did. I had a go a couple of weeks ago emceeing. It's really good fun.
It is fun. It is quite nice being able to tune a show to exactly how you want it to be.
And I also liked when people clapped at me.
Oh, yes. Yes, a bit of applause is nice.
Mm.
I had a wonderful moment the other night because I've been doing the music quite poorly down there on my guitar.
Oh, yeah, you've been strumming away.
Yes, and for the first 3 weeks I was doing that, and then I had to take 3 weeks off because I was working.
Mm.
And I walked in the other night with the guitar case, got a little cheer.
Nice one.
Two tables turned around to see me came in, and I was like, hey!
The muso is here.
I
don't know why I did that in my Bogan voice, but I did.
But yeah, that's kicking along down at 320 on Leichhardt.
I didn't get along to the last one this week, but when I have been down there, it's been a really fun show. I think it's good that we've got a Monday night venue again.
Because
it was much fun back in the day at O'Malley's, Filthy O'Malley's, as my cousin calls it. Yes, and it's really good to have another
It's a lovely
place.
Venue.
It is.
It harkens back, and this is before your time,
but
it harkens back to
then.
The Hub Cafe.
Oh, yes, this place of legend we have all heard so much about.
But when we were at the Hub Cafe, everyone was going, oh, well, this place is nothing compared to the good old days when we were playing at Zane's.
Oh, God, no, I've never even heard of that.
It's always about the golden age. Yes. There is no golden age.
Someday,
we're living in the golden age.
This will be the golden age.
It is.
It is right now. But the pole in the middle of the cellar thing, that gets to me.
Oh, look, there's always a pole in the middle.
Yeah.
There was a pole in the middle of the hub.
Uh-huh.
There's
a pole in the middle of the hub. Sorry. I just drank a cup of tea. I'm all pepped up on caffeine.
There was a pole in the middle of the stage door.
Oh.
Stage door had a great big pole.
The stage door was a fire trap, really.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just the one venue. Entrance and exit. You would die in flames you would.
Yeah. Oh,
anyway.
I think I went down in flames a couple of times at the stage door.
Oh, zing.
But, yeah, the rookie show's going wonderfully.
It really is.
This week was really interesting because every week we've had half a dozen junior members come along to try out or more. And this week we had two rookies and five veterans up on stage. I think our lineup was actually more professional than tonight's Albion show.
Oh, wow.
It was creepy. But really fun show.
We've got some really good rookies coming through. Am I allowed to use the term rookie?
Sure.
Okay.
Only Nat gets angry.
Oh, sorry, Nat.
Fuck her.
Oh. She's going to hear this.
No, she doesn't listen to these.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case...
She only listens to the ones that she's in.
No, I think there are some really good rookies at the moment. Sean is very excellent. I'm all for Sean. I've seen a few other people. Liam, I believe.
Well, Sean does stuff with the Sexy Detective Boys, doesn't he?
He does.
Or has done in the past.
I believe he's still at it, so to speak. Little plug there. There's going to be some really good shows from those guys coming up early next year. So everybody, stay tuned.
But yes, he's got some stage presence and
definitely.
Such already.
Yeah.
So it's funny how if you've done anything else where you're talking to people, you're two steps ahead of everyone else from
the get-go. It really
shows,
I think.
Hit the ground running.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember spending the first basic year and a half muttering and having terrible stage presence.
Really?
When I was performing. Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine dreadful. You being a shy, retiring flower, Dan.
I was a bit. Especially when confronted with these dinosaurs from the Golden Age.
Oh, yes, this Golden Age.
Oh, their ideas are probably much better than mine. I'll just wait.
We've got the rookie show happening, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
Cocktail specials.
$10 cocktails.
Yes.
And then $5 beers. Or $6 or $5.
I'm more a beer person than a cocktail person, I have to say.
I don't mind experimenting with cocktails.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
Experimented once with some cocktails in college, did you, Dan? They have
I ain't gay.
They have really good chips there as well.
The chips are the best chips I've ever tasted.
They're odd. They're a little bit sweet. Yeah. I think they put sugar in the batter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe cinnamon or something.
Ooh.
I don't know whether that would work. I'm all excited now.
We'll have to
I made a lasagna. To die for.
I saw that on Twitter. Apparently, Dan, you nailed that lasagna.
I nailed that lasagna.
Yes.
And then people turned it into a weird sex thing. It's horrible.
I didn't comment because I am a lady.
Speaking of which, could you put your top back on? That's very disorienting.
Lowered the tone.
Speaking of lowering the tone.
Yes.
We also did a Jane Austen themed long form.
That was not lower of the tone at all. That was rule classy, I'm determined to say. My mum loved it.
Everyone's mum loved it.
It was great. There were bonnets.
So that was Natalie Behensky's baby.
Yes. And an excellent job she did. She was Jane Austen.
Yep.
And during the second half, we saw a different side of Jane Austen as she grew more and more frustrated with her characters refusing to behave. She turned to drink, and I have never imagined Jane Austen in quite the same light.
Indeed, I've seen some wonderful photos.
There are some great ones
of Jane Austen just getting more and more hammered and angry,
exceedingly vexed. I believe the term is.
I was really anxious about that about my part in that show.
Really?
Because I've never read or watched any Jane Austen in my life before.
But you got into it. I saw lots of Facebook and Twitter stuff about it.
I always assumed that Jane Austen's work was boring, crappy romance for girls and
people
swimming in. It's mean humour.
Exactly.
Like Pride and Prejudice. She's a bitch. They're both so horrible. Like there's this very thinly veiled vitriol that they spout at each other.
Exactly.
Oh, I laughed and I laughed and I laughed.
And some great comic characters as well.
And I watched Sense and Sensibility.
That's my favourite.
Oh my God, that was funny.
Mm.
Just watching some of these poor characters who have all their emotions bottled up and watching... And imagining what's going on under the surface. Oh, and then the last bit where, what's her name? She's like an emotional time bomb.
Mm.
Throughout the entire film, you know she's got like this... She's gripping hold of every emotion in her body so that she can appear reserved and polite. And finally at the end, when it's too much for her, and she just explodes. Oh, I watched the last 2 minutes of that movie about 6 times. But... The reason I was watching them was so that I could get the hang of the cad character.
Ah, yes. You're a bit of a portmanteau of all the different cads in Jane Austen.
Indeed.
You did it very well. You had a wig and everything. It was an excellent wig.
Yes, the wig carried me, which is nice. In fact, the costumes did a lot of the work, the heavy lifting.
And I really appreciated Luke, Big Sexy, made a special effort. He got himself some mutton chops.
Yep.
And they were magnificent.
Shaved some great big mutton chops into it.
Fabulous.
And I'd forgotten all about it because I saw him when I arrived and was like, oh, wow, that looks great.
Mm.
Then completely forgot that it was anything strange for him to have these big mutton chops.
Exactly.
So an hour and a quarter later, when he first marches on stage in his costume and the audience goes, woo! I'm like, oh, I like that costume.
I think the costumes really helped to make it because we got some wonderful reactions. And of course, when Wade came on stage in full drag, that was magnificent.
He doesn't want to refer to it as drag, I don't think. He said, look, I'll dress up in women's clothing, but just to play a really strong woman character. Mm. I don't want to make this a footy show joke.
Well, I think he avoided that. When we were first picking out costumes, we had a dress for the Panto Dame, rummaging around the Arts Theatre costume department. But Wade was quite determined not to wear anything that was too, I'm a lady, sort of thing. And I think he did it really well.
Indeed.
He stole the show.
His idea was that it would be much funnier if he played it as realistically as possible.
Exactly.
And that's exactly right.
Yeah. No, he did it really, really well. We had some really strong performances overall, I think. But who did we have? Who was in the show? We had you and I, obviously.
Big Sexy.
Yep, Big Sexy.
Who did a wonderful brooding...
Oh, he was great.
Darcy-style character.
My favourite moment is when he came on at the very end and Greg had taken him outside and doused him with water because he'd just been swimming in the lake. That was magnificent. My mum liked that bit too, which is... Yeah, put it away, Mum. Who else do we have? We had Liam. Liam was the father character. Mm-hmm. I think he was very good. For the girls, we had me, obviously, Nat... Alicia Wiedemann. Oh, she was wonderful. She was really, really devoted to her character.
Her character kept copping it sweet.
Oh, like, she did the most wonderful reactions.
She just kept hitting low status, like, gold.
Yeah, it was magnificent. And we had Lauren. Mm-hmm. And Lauren was who we dubbed privately Lady Bitchington. I think she was Lady Ponsonby in the show. And her best line at the very end, if you didn't see the show, it won't make too much sense, but just at the very end, it's a shit-sation. I nearly lost it then. And, of course, we had Greg and...
Now Greg was originally going to be the CAD character.
That's right.
And he said, I don't want to be the CAD character. I always play that character.
But he did really well.
Yep. Yep.
He was like a puppy.
He got to play the character who was full of energy.
Mr. Bingley. He was always Mr. perfect Bingley. For him. Yeah.
Whereas I had to do all the research on how to speak proper Jane Austen-style language and be all witty. But I'll let the listeners in on a bit of a trick.
Oh, yes.
You and I, Amy, yes. Established that in order for us to be witty, we didn't actually need to say witty things. We just needed to react to each other like the other person had said witty things.
You have just ruined this podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, Dan, you're such a card. No, it's ruined now. The jig is up.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's what people listen to End Time for.
Yeah.
The backstage shenanigans.
Yeah, that's true. But no, it's very much the way that people respond to each other, particularly in ye olde sort of English. And I found it really fun speaking in that way.
You fell into it like crazy.
But I love Jane Austen.
It showed that you loved Jane Austen. It showed that you've immersed yourself in that world on multiple occasions. Yeah. Where I was sitting there just trying to skim stuff off the top, like making little crib notes of what words to switch in for other words.
No, you did really well.
Vexed, huh? Vexed. It is proper. It is proper.
I think we said vexed about 16 times during the show, but it was a good 16 times.
It was a very vexing show.
Exceedingly vexing.
Well, I mean, we could have just gone on and rehearsed and done Jane Austen, but to make it impro, we needed a reason for it to be impro.
Exactly.
And thus, we were getting the audience to help us fill in the details of the show, and so we ended up introducing all sorts of various ideas, including a dog show.
Yes,
and dog breeding.
At the end, my character had shaved a cat to make it look like a miniature Alsatian, which, if you're at the show, would make sense. And I think we had some good moments sniping between the two romantic leads as well. That was good.
Another problem I had with my character, though, was that I kept getting the wrong end of the stick. Because I was under the impression that a cad was someone who was a bit sort of lecherous and nasty. And, like, I watched bits of Pride and Prejudice and Sense and Sensibility. And established that, for at least for this show, that the character is basically just impulsive and cowardly.
Yeah.
So like, they really do want to spend time with the leading lady until a point where they realise that it's easier on them to just bail on them in order to get money or...
Yeah.
They're more... Basically, they take the coward's way out
exactly.
to deal with all those situations.
Exactly.
So once I figured that out, I realised that I wasn't trying to play a nasty character. I was trying to play a really nice and genuine guy up until a point where I make a decision that puts me in an unfavourable light.
And I think in the case of this show, my father's kennel's burnt down and we would have had to heal him and nurse him back to health. And your character thought, nah, maybe I'm just going over.
Probably need to bail on that.
Yeah.
I thought this would work out much better for me.
We got a pretty good audience.
Yep. 55
people. No, that's
all right.
Yeah. For one of our one-off sort of Sunday shows, I think that's really good.
Yeah, generally they clock in about 40.
Oh, there we go.
So it's nice to have a little bit of a boost. Plus, I think it's probably a little bit easier to sell Jane Austen because people already exactly. love Jane Austen.
Exactly.
So,
no,
and
definitely
they just want
kudos
more.
To Nat on that one. It was definitely a winner.
Indeed. And it was called Jane Austen by the Book. And there is some discussion as to furthering that into some other by-the-book stories.
Which authors do you think would be good for that?
I don't want to say which ones are good.
Okay.
Because I think we might keep some of them under our hat.
No, fair enough.
But I'll tell you who was brought up, which I think is a very bad idea.
Oh, yes.
Is Douglas Adams.
Oh, because it's funny.
Too funny.
Exactly.
You can't make something funny funnier by making it improvised.
Yeah.
You want to take, if you want to do sci-fi, you're much better doing Arthur C. Clarke, who did a sort of dramatic space story rather than a comedy one. Like, you wouldn't want to do Terry Pratchett.
No, no. I wouldn't want to do Terry Pratchett anyway because I don't know anything about Terry Pratchett. No. If we do a sci-fi one, I'm going to be much like you were with Jane Austen. I'm going to have to research extensively.
The computer keeps telling me it's vexed. What does that mean?
I'm exceedingly vexed, Dave. Is that right?
Dave, yes.
Yeah. Woo! That's exhausted my sci-fi knowledge right there. One thing that I did enjoy about it, as well as sort of using the...
Bonnets.
Yes. Oh, God, the bonnets. I really enjoyed doing the English accent. And I think that's the other thing that we were going to talk about today.
Indeed.
Accents.
Yes.
Did you like that smooth little segue
smooth
then?
Little transition. yes, we'll move on to our topic, which this week is accents and accents in impro. It's a wonderful time for talking about accents too, because some accents are good in impro.
Yes.
Some accents are just massively racist in impro.
It's a fine line, isn't it?
And coming a week after the Hey Hey Saturday blackface ordeal,
exactly.
Then it's a perfect time to discuss racism and trying to avoid it in impro. Because that's one of the few ways that you could be... like accidentally racist on an impro stage, and you really don't want to be that.
Yeah. But there's not too much other that we could do to offend people because we don't have wacky costumes to suddenly change into. So I suppose that is the one thing that needs to be watched.
It is something to be careful of because initially you don't realise that it could be a bad thing, and you also get some laughter for it too. Like if you do a sort of a Mickey Rooney Asian character.
Oh, Tiffany's sort of, oh, awful.
Oh, Miss Azali. No, you don't want to be doing that on stage.
No.
You can go mad for a Scottish accent. You can go completely over the top for a Scottish accent.
I find, and I haven't really thought about this before, but I wouldn't impersonate an Asian person in a very stereotypical way, but I have absolutely no problems breaking into the Swedish or that sort of thing. I wonder why that is.
Yes, and I reckon it's different in different parts of the world too.
Yeah.
Because I know that in American impro, they do Indian and I think some Asian accents a little bit more. But I wonder, like, we wouldn't think twice about breaking into a Mexican accent.
No.
Like a really dodgy Mexican accent.
That's true. But for Americans, it wouldn't be so...
Indeed, because Mexicans are right next door. Yeah. And there are actual socioeconomic and cultural issues between them. And actual hatred of it or irritation of that or looking down on of that race. So it's very curious about what accents you can do.
It's quite fascinating.
I thought that Indian accents were okay for a while and Wade used to get really grumpy about them. In fact, I think Wade might be one of the reasons why Impro Mafia is so careful about accents too. Like we went down to Melbourne and there were characters doing very strong Asian accents and it sounded great and was quite funny, but...
little voice saying, should I be laughing at this?
Yeah, and I think, like, Wade did some sort of weird politically correct feminist lesbian degree at uni, and so he's quite sensitive to those sort of things. You should have seen his reaction to my Adolf Hitler Vampire Hunter comic.
Oh,
he
dear.
Was not impressed.
Oh, dear.
But lots of other people were.
Well, there you go.
But as we've discovered from the Hey Hey incident, lots of other people are a little bit racist.
Well, one of the most interesting comments that I read in relation to the whole Hey Hey sketch fiasco was...
We should probably... I can't imagine anyone's not heard about this.
Oh, but, just in case.
But on the Hey Hey reunion special, there was an act of people doing the Jackson 5.
Yes,
and there were five guys in blackface and one guy in whiteface playing Michael Jackson. And the thing is, didn't they include Michael Jackson as one of the Jackson 5?
Yes.
Like, why were there six people on stage then?
I had not even thought of that.
That affronts my mathematical sensibilities.
Well, there you go. I didn't see it live. I don't make a habit of watching
reunion
specials starring Daryl Summers, but I must admit that I don't know if it was Friday or Saturday night, I was having a big night in and they were replaying both of them on Go.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a look. I was itching to see
this
blackface thing, and they took it out of the re-air.
They removed it.
So, obviously, despite everyone going, it's not racist, eh? it was something of concern for Channel 9.
The thing is, you get onto the comments of any of the online newspapers, and most comments are like, oh, no, it's fine. No, blackface is okay. These people don't have a sense of humour. And then every article I've written by anyone who I respect at all has gone, Yeah, it's quite racist.
Well, the thing, what I was going to say, the most interesting comment that I've read about it is that everyone here in Australia, okay, not everyone, but the majority of people defending it as just a bit of fun, are separating intent from what actually happened.
Mm.
They may not have intended to be racist. We're not saying they intended to be. However, in actuality, what happened can very easily be interpreted as racist. It doesn't matter that they had the best of intentions. That's a separate thing. And I thought that sort of summed it up nicely.
Yeah.
So then even again with improv, even if you're just intending your impersonation to be a loving representation of someone from Japan, say, if it comes out all a bit...
Yeah. And the thing is, you could head into a sketch and go, I'm going to play a realistic Japanese character and put the accent onto it. And you can be halfway through the sketch. And if another player makes an offer that makes you gives you a lower status on the basis of your nationality that you're portraying, then that becomes a racist scene.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where if the scene doesn't end the way that it probably should, then it could go very badly. So you're always taking a bit of a risk when you're playing a character like that.
Yeah.
Like if you start playing, you can play a racist character, but that character has to
get
their comeuppance and they have to be seen as being acknowledged as being quite racist.
Mm.
And I've done that before. It's quite fun to play a very rich white man character who doesn't even really understand that they're being racist when they're affronted with the black men on the golf course type things. But you do have to really hammer in that this is not a character that you want to bond with or agree with.
Even then, I'd be careful of it, just because it is such a minefield.
Yeah. But yet, we go up there and we tell jokes about babies being eaten or put in a microwave or something.
Just don't specify what race the babies are.
There you go. There you go. It's like those sheets that they hand out at universities in the first year. They say, it's not a lady doctor, it's just a doctor. It's not an Asian baby in the microwave, it's a baby in the microwave.
When you said that about lady doctors, Melody came back to me for a moment and she was cranky. Just for a moment.
You bonded far too much with that character.
I did. I keep waiting for her to return. But that's something for 2010 to reveal to us.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
But no, it is interesting what you said about how we're able to do European accents. And I love teasing Americans. I love to do big, broad American accents.
There are all sorts of American accents too.
That's true.
For some reason, that their accent drifts all over the shop. And if you can get the hang of that, then... And also in Great Britain too, there's 40 different accents.
And I think, well, it's obvious why it's okay for us to impersonate British people, because obviously...
We are them.
Well, yes, exactly, we're their sort of twisted offspring.
Mm.
But, and I suppose that the rest of Europe, in parts, basically the similar to Britain, the more similar to Britain it is, the more license we have to tease them.
Mm. And I guess the less we've tried to subjugate and enslave them in the past.
And of course, we're both saying this from the perspective of two of the whitest people I know.
I understand you've done a little bit of hip-hop dancing just recently.
Oh, God.
How did that go?
That proved
how white you were?
Yeah, it really did.
I did some hip-hop dancing for a while.
Yes, I heard about that.
It was like watching a deck chair fall down a flight of stairs.
No, Nat and I went along to Bollywood class and
you
hip-hop
You can't get
class
whiter than Nat.
We did our bit. We got the funk.
Yeah.
We brought it back. That's all the word that I know about that.
She looks like she's putting on blackface when she puts white moisturiser on.
Oh. Did you see her video?
Yes.
I haven't watched it yet because I ran out of bandwidth. It's come back today, actually, being the 15th. So.
Yes. Feel free to jump onto www.girlclumsy.com and see if you can track down her defence of Daryl Summers. Very clever stuff.
Presuming it's all very tongue-in-cheek.
Yes. Yes, it is.
You looked at me very strangely then. I'm just clarifying for the listeners at home.
Yes, she's not actually defending Daryl Summers. Mm. That doesn't sound like a Nat at all.
No, it really doesn't.
But I've done far too many scenes in 7-Elevens. And for a while, because the thing with improv is they go, well, go with your first instinct. Go with your first idea. Don't sit there waiting for a good idea. Go with your first idea and accept it.
What if your first idea is a horrible stereotype?
Yeah, well, that's the problem, isn't it? So my first idea in a 7-Eleven is, oh, well, thank you very much. Welcome to my 7-Eleven. Would you like Papa Dums? And this is a learning thing that a lot of people have to go through as well. Sometimes not. Sometimes people are mindful enough that they don't take those risks or don't think that could be a good idea. But then other people panic on stage and suddenly there's a scene about eating vomit. And
Ew.
Yeah, that was the first scene I ever saw get horned off stage.
That actually happened?
That actually happened.
I'm glad that all happened in the glory days before I was born, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think, when is it okay to impersonate, say, I don't know if you wanted to be a Chinese or Indian person on stage, how can you do it in a non-racist, non-caricature manner if it's important for the scene, for whatever reason, that your character
be good at
must
it.
Be that nationality?
Like, I was doing a really bad Indian accent. Oh, my goodness. No Indian talks like that.
No, they don't.
And they have that sort of twang to their voice. And if you could do that and you can nail that accent, then the people go, wow, that's amazing. And as long as you're not dragging out stereotypes of, like, humorous stereotypes that these people are the brunt of, that nationality is the brunt of, then you might be okay. I occasionally pulled out, I tried to play proper Asian characters at the stage door. And I remember Wade going, I don't know how that worked, Dad, but everyone else seemed to be happy with it. I wasn't being a dry cleaning store owner or running a quickie mart.
I don't know who it was. It may have been you. Someone was saying to me about, for example, doing a Japanese accent. Instead of bunging it on really thick, someone said just speaking properly, but very breathily, and everything is spoken in that sort of cadence.
Oh, okay. That's quite clever. Sort of a halting.
So it mimics the Japanese speech pattern. That was a terrible example.
Like a quiet William Shatner.
Exactly. I don't know, sort of hinting at it, but not.
Yeah, that'll work. I'd love to be able to do a Boston accent.
Oh, that'd be good.
Whenever I have to do American, it's basically cowboy. It's like Texan, which is a nice, obvious one to do. I managed to get the hang and practice a Bronx accent.
Oh, cool.
But I've got like a keyword that I learned at the supermarket. Because at the supermarket, when you go to the deli, you can order New York beef.
Oh, yes.
And I went there and I was like, New York beef. And I was like, oh, that's it. That's all I need. I just need to say New York beef. And then, Jimmy, you come in and you bring me these poor drug samples. I'm going to put you at the bottom of the river, Jimmy.
I turn into a chipmunk. When I try to do an American voice, I kind of turn into this little girl who speaks a bit like this.
Oh, it's kind of a that sort of Fran Drescher
thing.
Oh, it
is, isn't it?
Oh, my God, Mr. Sheffield.
This is just going to disintegrate into us doing funny voices now.
Well, I'm interested in knowing how to do some more because there are tricks of getting into some of them. And some people have trouble with different accents but can nail other ones for some reason. So I found when I was starting that using a keyword was always very helpful.
Okay.
So if I'm trying to do Irish, under my breath I'll be like, to be sure. Potatoes. And for some reason I can just launch into Scottish, like no tomorrow.
My Irish and Scottish keep mixing themselves
jumping back
up.
And forth? Yeah. Well, my Irish keeps switching back into Scottish. Then under my breath I'll be, to be sure. And continuing on. Natalie can do a beautiful Irish accent.
I don't think I've heard it.
She does an amazing job of that.
Okay.
Actually, Natalie's accents and Wade's accents are like they do a really great job of them. But then you've got a couple of accents under your belt as well, don't you? Like you've got Swedish, but then you lived in Norway or Scandinavia or Finland
in
or something.
Norway
for a while. That would help, I'd imagine.
Yes, but it's hardly a realistic.
No, but you wouldn't want a realistic one. You want to ham that up like crazy. I had trouble doing an Australian accent. I had to do an Australian accent, and
you couldn't get kicked out of the country for that, Dan.
It was dreadful. I was
like a real strine.
There you go.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that.
I want to talk like this for the rest of the podcast, eh?
Oh, can we not?
All right.
I'll have to change the levels.
It's too nasal.
Oh, can't do an Aboriginal accent.
I think that's another one of those danger zones.
That's a minefield here. The problem is, it's such a It's a really fascinating dialect too.
Mm.
To mimic it, it's not just their cadence and the way that they form the sounds, but the Aboriginal culture has a different way of thinking about language.
Okay.
And so they don't pluralize things. So they will say, if they've got two dogs, they'll say, I got two dog. I can't do it.
But that's similar to other languages. Like, I could be completely wrong here, but I think Japanese doesn't have plural.
Yeah, actually, I'm not sure whether it's Japanese or whether it's something like
See your Japanese, but I haven't remembered any of it.
Yeah. And then, of course, how do you do an accent from South America?
Oh, God, I don't know. So many questions. I think we've opened a can of worms here.
And the trick to South African
I love doing a South African accent. Oh, God, that's terrible.
It's so close to New Zealand.
You do one.
Oh, a South African accent?
Yes.
Everything I learned about my South African accent, I learned from Lethal Weapon 2.
I was reading...
Give me some Cougar
ants. I was reading Disgrace recently, and I kept reading all of the dialogue in my head in terrible South African accent. I'm going to stop that now.
I saw a bit of that Leonardo DiCaprio film with the terrible...
Blood Diamond.
Blood Diamond.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but someone was ranting about how he sounded like an Australian.
Yeah.
I think it was on cracked.com. We always tell interesting facts, like, or to Greg. Mm-hmm. Greg is a big reader of it, too. Someone will say something, and we'll go, oh, I saw that on the internet,
yes,
too.
I learned that. Where on? Well, remember there was a competitor to Mad Magazine? Well, that's where I get all of my information from now.
That's right. It was an actual magazine, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
I never read it as a magazine.
No, no one did.
No.
It was always Mad Magazine back in the day. Now, the Mad Magazine website? Useless.
Yeah?
And Mad Magazine? Dying. No one buys them anymore.
But they've got Mad TV, though.
I think that's been cancelled.
Has it?
I think so.
Well, there you go.
All falling apart for them.
What? Me worry?
Yes, you should.
Yeah. Now is the time.
I love the New Zealand accent.
Oh, yeah.
That's so much fun to
listen to. We're allowed to do that.
Yes.
Anyone in the Commonwealth who's white, we're allowed to make fun of.
Hmm. What, like Aboriginals? No, they're not white.
No.
And the Indians? No, they're not white.
I feel mildly racist.
We can
to
do
say
Canadians.
Oh, yeah, we can mock Canadians till the cows come home.
Eh?
That's all I know about mocking Canadians.
You do it till the cows come home?
No.
Oh, they can say E. It's interesting because in
Hi,
America...
Chris.
If you start in America and you go north, they make fun of you because the further north you go, the more the Canadians go, E? But the same thing happens in Queensland because the further north you go, the more they go, A?
God, it's true.
Yeah.
How odd.
And I suppose we have our own various subtle differences in accent in Australia as well.
Oh, we definitely do.
But only in scenes where pools are discussed. Pools or pools?
I had never noticed that before.
Yeah.
Well,
so in Brisbane, you go for a swim in the pool.
Yeah.
But if you're in Adelaide, you go for a swim in the pool.
Pool. Oh, I'm glad I'm not in Adelaide for so many reasons.
City of churches. Beautiful place.
Great.
If you ever want to get, abandoned in a bin full of acid and left in an abandoned bank vault, South Australia is the way to go.
Excellent. I shall book my trip with Jetstar post-haste. But there's regional differences too, things like togs.
Yeah.
Togs. Port.
Like the thing you wear on your back and you fill
full
school of
books.
Port. Your ports.
Yeah,
yes.
My mum is always going on about ports. Like she refers to a suitcase as a port. And overseas, people go, excuse me? But she's determined.
I used to have a school port when I was a kid.
Mm. Port Rex.
Yes.
You remember Port Rex?
Yeah. Okay, cool. And we have SARS.
Oh, yes.
Big SARS. The fun and games.
Good times.
I saw some amazing stuff online of this girl who did like 44 accents from all around the UK.
Oh, God.
So she started up in Scotland and then wove her way down through Manchester and Liverpool and then London and then Cockney and then Welsh. And
see, the thing is...
Welsh accent's tricky.
Oh, there's a lovely Welsh girl in my office.
Oh, that'd help.
Yeah. Oh, I can't do it.
No.
But I keep listening to her sneakily to hopefully pick it up, but I haven't yet.
You need that keyword.
Yeah, exactly.
For some reason, I don't know why I was doing this, I was trying to do a sort of a gangster girlfriend voice.
Okay.
That.
What, like a gangster's mole?
Oh, my God! You shot that guy! And like that really twangy sort of thing. And I realised it's perfect for like a computer nerd. Oh my God! The quantum bevelizer has been activated!
It is, actually.
Yeah.
Just want to give you a little pair of spectacles and a little pocket protractor.
Pocket protector.
Yeah.
Lab coat.
Yeah.
Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, and of course, I can do pretty much any accent that Tony Martin has already done, but worse than Tony Martin.
Nat was saying that she's learnt many things from Tony Martin too. I believe it was Nat.
He manages to grab the really obvious bits out of an accent and then drop everything else, and it makes it it's made it really easy for me to pick stuff up.
As long as it's through the Tony Martin filter.
Yes, through the Tony Martin filter. I've got my Arnold Schwarzenegger, which I use as my Thor voice in Touched by a Hammer.
It's not a tumor. What have I got?
I'm quite fond of impersonating the Queen.
Nice.
Thank you.
Nice. Now, what else has Tony Martin done? Oh, he did a wonderful David Bowie thing.
I remember remember you did a David Bowie impersonation ages ago, like back at the O'Malley show, and I thought, that's a fairly good David Bowie.
All through the Tony Martin filter.
Oh, okay.
It's a rocket man, yeah. And he's flying into the sky. And it's that weird wavering sort of in the back of the throat thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of fun. Fly to the Conchords do a Bowie song. Well, like a mock-up Bowie song.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and they really nail that voice as well. And I think it's the voice that makes any David Bowie song, because it's pretty easy to sort of mock the content.
Although, I know that one of my favourite musicians, Jonathan Colton, did a parody. Well, not a parody, but an homage to a David Bowie song.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually challenged to do a David Bowie song, and so he sang a song about the first dog in space who was sent up by the Russians.
Laika.
Yes. And so he didn't do the Bowie voice,
mm-hmm.
but he nailed the music
and the
style of song, and it sounds brilliant. So look it up. Go to jonathancolton.com and do a search for Space Doggity.
That's kind of like what we said before about maybe not doing the full-on parody, but having enough of the recognisable notes to make people aware of who you're trying to be.
Indeed.
Nice little callback there.
I remember why I did that David Bowie voice now.
Mm.
I got up to do a song with a rookie, and it was a cappello, and the rookie didn't really know how to sing or to do impro song.
Oh, dear.
But that didn't stop them from jumping up and having a crit hot go.
That's the way.
And I was like, I can't establish how this is a song yet. So I'm just going to have a crack at my own version.
Yeah.
And then I got to the end of the verse, and then Wade called it down. I was very happy, though.
I think singing in accents or funny voices, I find that quite the challenge. It's really hard to keep. We were doing the Albion show a few weeks ago. I'm not sure if you were there or not, but I, for some reason, was like a Igor, assistant to the mad scientist character. Mm. Yes, master. But it was in a sing about it or an opera. I can't remember which one. It's impossible to sing in that voice. And that's a big decision. What do you do? Do you abandon the voice for the sake of the song, or do you keep doing the voice for the sake of the scene?
Well, you can abandon the voice to do the song, because you're doing a sort of an aside anyway.
Yeah.
So you can break out of character in the same way that... Do you remember that film, The Sum of Us?
Oh, yeah, Russell and Crowe, he would come out of the coma.
And he'd come out of the stroke.
I thought that was brilliant.
To do monologues to camera.
Yeah.
But he couldn't communicate with his son at all. It was very, very... And you can do the same thing on an impro stage in something like a sing about it.
Yeah.
Or even a musical. But at the same time, it's really good practice to keep your accents, to practice singing in the car.
Isn't it funny how everybody can sing in an American accent, but when a lot of the time people find it difficult to do an American accent when they're speaking? But even as kids, my sister and I, my mum was always very anti-globalization.
Mm-hmm.
She'd hear us playing, and apparently
so I've when you did the alphabet off Sesame Street,
yeah.
She'd run in and from say, the other end of the house, Zed.
But we'd be playing, like, we'd have My Little Ponies or Barbies, and you know that the way that Barbie talks is because you're violently shaking her up and down, and that's how you tell that Barbie's talking. She's leaping in the spot. And it would always be
that would
an
explain
American accent.
Why Australian girls always jump up and down when they see each other.
There you go.
They see each other, and so you go, oh my God! And they jump, bounce up and down.
That's because they're talking.
There you go.
That's how it works. Same thing works with My Little Ponies. That's why horses jump, Dan.
I see.
It all fits together. But yeah, we would speak in American accents because we'd heard it on TV, and that was how... We thought, if we're doing a story,
mm-hmm.
well, on TV, if it's a show, American accent. And when you sing songs, same thing.
I did singing lessons, and both of my singing teachers, I drove them nuts because I kept singing in a Canadian accent.
Canadian?
Because I kept singing along to Bare Naked Ladies songs.
Oh, dear.
So I was so excited about them. And so they had to beat it out of me and try to get me to do them in a British accent.
I've got a musical show coming up next month, and I'm hoping that it is going to be an American-style musical, because I love... belting in that sort of American voice that only works in those big Broadway style sort of things.
But that sort of Chicago.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't mind seeing
you
a sort of a
belt in Australian.
I'd like to see sort of a Grease type of thing.
Oh, that'd be fun too. Well, it remains to be seen.
Like those wacky, like the sort of Grease Lightning where they just sing about building the car and stuff.
Yeah. I'm making a sandwich now.
A sandwich.
Oh, good times, good times.
But I tell you what, there's nothing more exciting than driving down the freeway at 100 kilometres an hour, singing along to the radio in the voice of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I can't drive, so I could do that on the bus, maybe.
Yeah.
See, this is why I have not experienced that, because I don't think the bus driver would care for it.
All the single ladies. Wait, to say it. All the single ladies. All the single ladies. Oh.
I'm going to try that.
It's good fun.
Maybe just walking down the Queen Street Mall.
And time. You have been listening to Amy Curry. You can check out Amy's Twitter at twitter.com/AmyCurry, AmyCurrie.
Amy with a Y, Al.
I'm Dan Beeston. You can check out my webcomics at www.invisiblespiders.com. For news about Impro in Brisbane, visit impromafia.com. Thanks to David Peachy for our theme music. Hosting for Antime is immaculately provided by CivicNet Web Design. Why did I put in like a wog accent? Oh, I'm in Greek. I meant Greek.
Oh,
shit.
No. I'm trying to help.
Natalie can't stop herself from doing that either. It just goes to show another cockroach.
Thank you.
A big one too.
That's disgusting.
Yes.
Don't put that in the podcast.
It's all over my shoe.
There's no cockroaches in my house.
It's the second one I've killed today here.
No, that's a lie.
And I killed the first one and it died next to another dead one.
That's not true.
I saw a possum in there. And a fox. There were foxes in the kitchen.
And a snake.
A bear going through the bins.
Oh, it's all practice for falafel.